Good afternoon and welcome to our final Urbana 12 news conference. We hold these news conferences for purpose. Zeal, come on in. We'll need one more chair.
Great.
We hold these news conferences to give the media who's here the opportunity to speak to some of our InterVarsity leaders and some of the plenary speakers. So let me introduce our table here. First, on my immediate left is Allison Seward, who is the performing arts director, who directs the performers who you've been seeing doing some unique forms of ministry. Next to Allison is Tom Lind, Vice President for Missions for InterVarsity USA and Director of Urbana. Zio Machado has been IFES Regional Secretary for Latin America and is also a pastor with Free Methodist Church in Sao Paulo, Brazil. And next to Zio is Kim Evans, who is a Vice President with InterVarsity Canada. And you also may have noticed that InterVarsity Canada is spelled slightly differently than InterVarsity when it applies to the United States. I don't know that anybody has any opening statements, so we'll open it up for questions.
I have a question for you, Tom. What are some of the trends that you've been noticing this year?
With this conference in particular? I can share a few. I think some of the indications are this particular generation of students at this Urbana. I think they're very soft-hearted and ready to make decisions and commitments. We sense that they want to be challenged and are being challenged. There's a lot of ways, different ways to say that, I think, but certainly we've seen them respond to challenge well and want to be challenged. And I think some of the data points we have for that, certainly last night we saw significant decisions, commitments made for their lives. 4,224 students made decisions for more than 2 years of missionary service in their lives. That's a significant number. About 10,000 cards were turned in, 4,224 of them made long-term commitments. Many of the seminars we've seen packed out also relate to their becoming a radical disciple, the radical discipleship. This David Platt seminar is very theology of suffering. A lot of seminars dealing with some very serious issues of our day, and I think students are kind of rising to the challenge and wanting to respond to God's invitation, and that's been, I think, a pretty consistent theme. Another thing that's been happening this week, we've had Live 58, which is a sort of a documentary film. Really addressing extreme poverty and what communities have done to address it. They typically have, I believe, a 7-8% response rate of, after seeing the film, people making a decision to do something about it and making a commitment. We've seen a 65% response rate to watching that film, meaning if 1,000 students have seen that film this week, which I believe more than 1,000 have, 650 will have made a commitment to do something after that film. So even the amount of books being sold, the students being intentional about buying books, we've seen more students buy books by significant amounts more than the last Urbana as well. So a lot of indications on the soft-heartedness of students and willing to take seriously what they're hearing and responding to the challenges.
I'll go a follow-up with that. Why do you think that is?
That's a good question. I mean, certainly there's a lot of some ways I'll answer that. That's been one of our biggest prayers for this conference. We've been praying, our outcome was to see the Lord compel this generation, that the Lord would do something to compel this generation to give their whole lives to missions. And we've worked at the program in that way, and we've prayed towards this vision. Our speakers have been fantastic, the performing arts, the worship, all. What I've heard over and over again is the integration of the whole program, the Gospel of Luke Bible studies in the mornings, the performing arts and worship being kind of missional, and even the theater sketches, for example, expositing the scriptures in a profound way, the teaching from Callisto over the course of the week, the evening sessions, the afternoon seminars, so many aspects all integrated, I think, and the Lord has used that to really touch this generation. I do think there's something about this generation too, that they're, you know, there's some serious things going on around the world, challenges that they're very well aware of, whether it's global poverty, conflict in the Middle East and North Africa, significant persecution around the world. And I think and there's something about this generation that I think they're ready to rise up to that challenge. So I don't know if it's just about what we've done here, but there's something about this generation too. And I've said that in the lead up to Urbana, I think even at the last press conference, I have a lot of hope for this generation. I think they, they're just uniquely gifted for these times and really can rise up to that, to respond.
Do you feel that enough attention has been given to issues that are, you know, non-compassion-related issues such as Bible translation? I know that before, Urbana used to have a Wycliffe speaker, a plenary Wycliffe speaker, and I think that's kind of phased out. Can you talk a little bit about that? Do you feel that the balance is there with compassion-related stuff and evangelism, church planning, Bible translation?
I can address that in a couple ways. In some ways, I'm a Wycliffe speaker, since I'm the vice chair of the board of Wycliffe. I think that Bible translation, you might say, you put it in terms of how did you frame it? Compassion?
It was a bad way to put it. But you know what I'm talking about. Just there is this generation, yesterday used the phrase the justice generation.
Yeah.
They're interested in those things that are you know, related to poverty and related to compassion ministry type things.
Yeah.
But then, you know, you have the other side. There shouldn't be a dichotomy.
Yeah, right.
And Urbana's done a good job of integrating. So my question is, do you feel that the balance has been found here at Urbana between those two
things? We've heard significant feedback this week that there's been a very clear biblical call and a very clear focus on the gospel to the nations, including the proclamation and the demonstration of the gospel. And I think we've heard it over and over again. I would say a lot of the missionary organizations who are here, including Wycliffe and many organizations that are doing like-minded work, are significantly celebrating what they're seeing and are very happy with, I think, a lot of the both demonstration and proclamation of the gospel being strong. And I think you've seen that in our program this week, and I feel the same way.
I have a quick question. What about, he mentioned social justice. Do you see that as a trend in this generation as well? I know that there was a lot with IJM in 2009. Is that still as strong, or is it kind of shifting a little bit?
For this generation? I don't know if someone else, I feel like any of you could answer that too, in terms of, you know, what you're seeing in Canada, in terms of the question being, is justice still strong value and passion of this generation? This, for example, 12.
I think one of the most interesting things about this generation is that justice is a way into the gospel rather than just a response to it. So I think our tendency as leaders and evangelicals and probably people who've been around for a longer time is to think of, we commit first to Jesus, and then one of the ways that we respond to Jesus is to go and do justice. But I have an awful lot of students, including my own son, who's 17 and here is a senior in high school, who are really attracted to justice as a door into the fullness of the gospel. And so I think that's one pretty significant difference about this generation. And I remember the first time I ever saw that in a student was probably back in the early 90s. And it frankly alarmed me. I didn't know what to do with it. But that person is now not just still a believer, but it was one student who I saw do that. She committed to a tutoring program we ran, and I thought to myself, well, how is that going to work? We're having the kids memorize verses, and we're talking about the Bible and doing parables with them. I can't imagine that's going to really work. But she converted pretty quickly after she joined us, and she's now a theology professor an evangelical school in England, so I can't complain about that as a possibility. I mean, she just wrote a book on Christian formation. She's, you know, kind of an amazing person, but that was her way in. And I think that's, I think probably enlarging our thinking to include that pattern is important for this time in our culture.
Okay, go ahead.
Can you go back to the little bit on the numbers?
Yeah.
The 4,224 made long-term commitments. Do you have some other numbers from last night?
I do. 7,058 made overall commitments to global or cross-cultural missions. And then, as I mentioned, the 4,224 is a subset of that 7,000 of short-term commitments, 5,744. Mid-term commitments, 3,071. And by the way, the overall cards turned in, did I already mention, there are 10,000 cards. So it's these are significant numbers when you think about only 10,000 cards were turned in out of the 16,000 folks who are here. Actually, this relates to...
That's a high percentage.
That's a high percentage, yeah. So to give you some context, Urbana 09, which is very significant Urbana, we had the most long-term commitments in a decade at that Urbana. It was 2,600-something at that Urbana. So we had 4,224 here. I think there's been a strong emphasis, you have also seen a strong emphasis on evangelism, which has always been a part of Urbana, that... that students being challenged to share their faith with their friends on campus, in cross-cultural situations in cities, and then to the nations, literally, to people groups around the world. And I think indicative of that is another number from last night, 6,434 made decisions to lead an evangelistic Bible study with a non-believer after Urbana. And that's a large number, 6,434, also the largest that we've had since we've done that. I think 09, did we do that in 06, do you remember?
I think we did.
So 06, 09, this is the largest we've had in terms of responses to that as well, 6,434. So I think we're really seeing a generation really that's passionate both about justice and evangelism. In InterVarsity USA, this may have been touched on in an earlier press conference, and we're seeing the largest evangelistic harvest we have in our history, both last year, and then if you take a five-year period, the most conversions we've seen in any five-year period in our history as well. So it's really, you know, interesting and interesting generation, and we celebrate a lot of what God is doing through the students and in the students' lives.
I heard a figure of 800 was given for the conversions. And then somebody else said it was only 92.
Right. So that's why we hesitated giving preliminary numbers. The 800 are the number of people who went to a back room, who actually went to a back room after the call to faith, Ram's call to faith, yesterday morning. We usually don't use that as a final number for anything. I think that was an anecdote probably that you heard. In terms of the decisions we've recorded on that students have made on paper, that number is, well, let me get that for you again. Recommitments to major recommitments to following Jesus as Lord and Savior, 3,740. First time decisions to put their faith in Christ is 96. So, and I think in some ways we wouldn't be that surprised at that in terms of this is a missions conference. We wouldn't have that many folks who are not following Jesus here, but you never know. And certainly Ram's call was very strong yesterday.
That 3,740 figure, those were other decisions made in the counseling room?
No, those are from the card, major recommitments. In that room... just a limited number of folks decided, because we know some students don't go, some people like staying in their seats, some people are embarrassed, you know, so that number I gave you, these are hard data from decision cards.
Okay.
Have any studies been done with regard to follow-up and those who make them some pastor banners? Is there any attempt to kind of engage with these commitments after they're made?
We do have some longitudinal studies that we do, but we don't have a hard tracking system, if you will. So we don't take an ID. There's reasons for that, but we don't take an ID number currently and track the person over history. It's something that we hear the stories often, and it's encouraging, but we don't have tracking. We do have significant follow-up. We do, whether it's through urbana.org, whether it's through our magazine, Testify, that goes out and providing follow-up resources. And a lot of the follow-up, I'd say, we rely on our partners, which are 260 mission agencies who are here, who will continue to be in relationships with a lot of these students who are here.
The offering was the progress of the offering? Are we still going for the $1 million figure?
We'll see. We're, right now, all I can share is what's shared from the platform. As of this morning, we were at 800,000. There are still donations coming in online. There are a variety of things could happen in the next couple of days, but it's still open. Yeah.
So we're not really going to have a figure. I mean, the only figure we can use today is 800,000.
As of this morning, yes.
Yeah.
And I would say,
one figure may go up in the next few weeks.
Yeah, and
certainly it'll go up the next few weeks.
Yes, and I would say one of the things that we rejoice in is students. At this Urbana, students not only gave 5 days of their time over the holidays, they gave of their hands in assembling the caregiver kits. That actually, those caregiver kits, 32,000 caregiver kits, also represent close to $400,000 of resources that have been given. They've given an offering of $800,000 in cash, and then they've given of their lives. And so they've given so much. So I think as we think about the sheer amount of resources that have been mobilized through this Urbana, it's significant.
Just a sidebar on the stuff you guys are talking about with what you've done with the programming this year. The question's for Allison. How much more has performing arts come into play with the aspect of missions and even evangelistic work, say, over the last 5 years?
Do you mean outside of Urbana?
Yeah.
That's a hard thing to answer because I don't interact with... There aren't that many missions agencies actively interacting kind of out there about what they're doing with performance. I can tell you about Urbana. Since 1987, when we were still working with a single worship leader, a piano, and an organ, I was in on redesigning the worship in 1990 and then led it for a couple of Urbanas, and I can't believe how far we've shifted. I think the arts feel like a significant partner in the full communication of the program here in a way that, and I think even at this convention, I feel that most profoundly out of any I've worked on. And I suspect that missions agencies who are experiencing effective communication on the field are finding that arts in general, other than linear presentation, are helping them to communicate. Mostly because the world isn't communicating predominantly in linear, logical, Western forms as much. That doesn't mean those aren't important forms, but they're sharing space more more often and more fully with aggregate communication like video and music and performed work. And so I do think that it, for Christians and certainly for missions-oriented people, figuring out how to use the arts and not just use them, but to partner with artists in communicating in ways that we might not otherwise communicate is becoming more and more significant and more important. It's key to good communication.
Do you find that's bringing in another segment of students who feel like they can actually participate?
I do. We had a seminar earlier this week, and it was really interesting to look out across the crowd and see a whole bunch of students that are, they're dressed like artists, they're, you know, they express themselves themselves creatively through their clothing, through their language. They were all very relieved to be in a room with a whole bunch of artists and talk about what it's really like to try to communicate faith through the arts. And what it's like sometimes to encounter a church that is a little bit stuck on the sort of linear, standard, modernistic communication that makes it hard to do art. We feel like, you know, every once in a while I have somebody be upset that the entirety of the gospel, Jesus was not, death and resurrection was not preached in every skit. And, you know, they call them skits. We call them sketches. We're trying to kind of move a direction. But, you know, that's a newer, I think being able to get out of that mode and do a wider variety of things is a newer opportunity for artists. And if you talk to anybody on my team, the overwhelming experience of this week has been, this is so great, I'm having such a good time, and I'm so grateful that God is letting us use our gifts this way. It's just, it's been really profound. So, sorry, that doesn't answer your question very directly, but...
It's enough.
Okay.
It was going in the direction I was going to ask.
Good. Okay.
So.
We heard some rumors with the last event that there were some complaints about a lack of emphasis on evangelism and kind of overemphasis on other non-evangelism issues. Did you guys kind of respond to that feedback in planning for Urbana and try to do something that was more integrated, or was that not a concern?
I would say we listen to the feedback on every Urbana pretty seriously. I think so. We did hear that type of feedback. We heard a lot of other feedback as well, and we take that seriously. I do think with every Urbana, though, we try our best to emphasize the fullness of God's mission, and you see it as this Urbana as well. The wholeness of the gospel. And I'm glad that we had a very strong evangelistic emphasis at this Urbana. I'm very glad that we had a strong emphasis on the gospel. And what I've heard from a lot of folks is biblical call to missions, very clear biblical call to missions at this Urbana. That's what many folks who have been to many Urbanas, that's been one of the main comments I've heard, strong biblical call to missions.
As a representative of Mission Frontiers magazine, I have to ask this question.
Yeah.
Do you feel that there was enough emphasis on the places that are least reached with the gospel? Do they never heard, you know, 40 window type missions?
I hope so. I think that we were intentional on that front as well. I think we were intentional to emphasize unengaged people groups, frontiers. If you look at some of the repeated words in many sessions, ends of the earth, repeated many times. I use the words unengaged a few times and referring to people groups. You've heard several of the speakers refer to groups that are really on the margins. And in many ways, the Gospel of Luke in the morning Bible studies, I would say, and that's something that not everyone gets a chance to see, but you know, you have most of the conference having morning Bible studies focus on people groups on the margins, forgotten people groups. Much included in that are those who have never heard of the gospel before. So,
I have a big question. This is the same question I asked yesterday. Looking to 2015 now, maybe everybody could address, or two or three could respond. Going forward, what is the plan? And I know it's a huge process of generating the next Urbana, but how do you talk about the future and what you see coming and where you're going, things like that.
Yeah, after a two-week vacation, maybe. Yeah. we are planning for an Urbana 2015. I could tell you that. you know, typically the process will begin, you know, fairly soon. I think we wrap up, we begin following up on this Urbana. We, you know, I'm going to meet with some friends from a variety of mission agencies, actually, in a few months, with some deans of seminaries, some missiologists, and other missions leaders in a few months, just to do some long-term reflection on what God is doing around the world. And probably, you know, 6 to 9 months, we'll get going on the next Urbana again. So we do, yeah. Coming up.
I spent some time with the Francophone contingent. I understand there's going to be a student missions congress in Togo next year. And I'm wondering what you can tell us about other Urbana-like meetings that may be happening around the world.
You want to share something?
Mexico, next April, mm-hmm. for our 1,000 students in Guadalajara. The last one was Guadalajara.
Yeah, it's going to be an hour from Mexico City.
Oh, an hour from Mexico City. Yeah.
Vive is the name of the
conference.
Vive.
Yeah.
What impact do you think North American Urbana has on the Mexican and other conferences?
My first time in Urbana, it was Urbana 2000. Mm-hmm. I brought 10 leaders from Latin America to see the vision of the mission conference and to learn how to prepare, learn principles, values, and ask them, do we think this kind of conference would be useful for us in Latin America? And two countries decide to try. Brazil, they have done two major conferences like that for 1,000 students, 2004 and 2006. And Mexico, they have done two, and the next one's coming from the 10 two national movements decide, yes, this kind of experience is good for us also. They adapt for their situation, their context, but they are following the steps of to challenge students in places like that. Yeah.
There is a conference director's track going on. Have you been briefed on that? So there are conference directors of these mission conferences meeting in a secret room. You know, we don't advertise it, but there's about 25 to 30 of them, and they're learning a little bit about Urbana behind the scenes and planning their own mission conferences. Nigeria is having one. Their missions conference, they're expecting 10,000 or hoping for 10,000. I believe it's in October.
This year,
2013, 10,000. And then I think I referenced in the offering the Kenya Co-Mission Conference that probably is in 2014. That one usually draws, I want to say, about 5,000 from Kenya and 16 African countries.
So Kenya's 2015?
I think it's 2014.
2014.
Yeah, Nigeria, run by NIFES.
So what's the one that's 2013?
Nigeria. And there's, you know, 10 countries we're probably missing in you know, as we think about it. So we won't get name all of them. But
that's a really gutsy move for Nigeria to have a big, bold Bible conference.
Yeah, in fact, they've been doing it for every 3 years for quite some time. They were impacted by an Urbana, I would say, at least 2 decades ago.
That's a big student movement.
Yeah.
Well,
it's either the first or second
right now,
largest in the world.
If you bring a group of Christians together
right.
like that and turn
right.
it,
yes.
yeah.
yep.
security's going to be insane.
Yes.
Got some issues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When did you say
Simple.
Brazil and Mexican conferences?
Mexico. It'll be April 2013.
And the Brazil conference?
It was... 2004 and 2006.
Okay.
They are doing every 10 years now. They decide to have one.
Okay.
Are these all university related, or are they like the Mission Korea have other?
Yeah, I would say they're hosted by the local IFES movement there, so International Fellowship of Evangelical Students. So, as you may know, it's their national movements that are nationally led. Independent of InterVarsity USA, but part of the same association, sister movements.
Just kidding. Yeah. The first capital I showed the picture yesterday, Ricardo and Ruth. Ricardo was the GS for the Brazilian movement at the conference in 2006. at the end of the conference sent them to Uruguay. So the mission in Uruguay is a result of this mission conference in Brazil in 2006. And Uruguay is well known in Latin America as a missionary cemetery because of it's the hardest place to do ministry in Latin America. So the ministry of Uruguay today is a result of this mission conference, who is the result of the Uruguay.
I have a question. Tom referenced some of InterVarsity USA's statistics. Versus the last 7 years, the number of members has doubled. Just curious how things are going in Latin America and Canada. In terms of the broad overall picture.
In terms of attendance?
In terms of converts, just student ministry in general, trends.
Mm. In Latin America, we are not quite good in numbers. it would be difficult for me to say. I can see the growth as the church growth in Latin America, and even among younger people, the growth is fast, very fast. But I don't have the right numbers to give you. But the big picture is good. Yeah.
I can echo that. In Canada, we are seeing certainly an increase in students involved, students' responses. In terms of actual numbers, I don't have those at hand. What I can say is that we have almost 2,200 participants here at Disurbana. That's more than we've ever had before from Canada. In the last three Urbanas, we've just seen a steady increase in the number of students. More than approximately half of those are InterVarsity students, so they're part of InterVarsity chapters in Canada.
Besides the kit build, what are some of the other innovations this year that are outstanding? Like, what about those launch workshops?
Launch lab,
yeah.
I think we're pleased with Launch Lab. It's meant to be an interactive place where students could bring their missions ideas and help them develop from ideas to concepts to that would impact the world and impact lives for the gospel. As far as from our perspective, it is. I mean, they're actually final voting today on the two projects that win seed money for that. And I think what you see through Launch Lab and even the Business Changing the World track is many participants who are wrestling with how can they use their vocation to impact people groups around the world. So. Whether it's a pharmaceutical, working for a pharmaceutical company, to starting a new ministry, to starting a new business enterprise, how can they use different gifts they've been given to join in on, you know, God's mission? So I think that's been kind of interesting for us. I will say one thing I want to just maybe sort of like a statement related to this Urbana. I shared some of this in the opening session too, a few days ago here at the press conference. I think we wanted to be clear that this Urbana, we recognize, and as I take this is my the first time directing, we are part of a long-lasting legacy and history of Urbana since 1946, which has been about and always been about calling this generation and this context to missions. I met with Dave Howard, who's a good friend of mine, and he's been consulting and he's been mentoring and just been a great person throughout. He's been director in 73 and 76. I met with other former directors of Urbana as well, Jim Tebbe and Barney Ford, and really wanting to make sure we were clearly focused on the gospel and the biblical call to missions. And I think that's what we strive for. And we're just really pleased and celebrate what God has done this year, this week, and seeing students respond to that. What is different with each generation is how students learn. So Launch Lab, a join-in, some of the theater sketches you saw, different. There are some different ways we communicate because this generation learns in different ways. Having said that, I think you've seen some very strong classical Bible exposition done by Clisto Dede this week as well. So I think we couldn't be more pleased with the way we've tried to communicate this week and then how this generation learns from that.
We answered the first question before I got to ask it, so I'll ask you a second question on Launch Lab. Will this continue?
We'll see. This was a pilot, so we'll see.
All right, thank you very much for coming.